I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the second edition of Desert Isolation Discs. You may hear that this voice is not the voice of Alex Lawson. Alex has kindly let me sit in as the interviewer for this episode. Alex is well known for being the editor, founder and originator of Nottingham's greatest fanzine, Shadowplay, and its accompanying blog/website. Starting off with your writing, what has always struck me is that it seems like you were writing from a really young age. What gave you the confidence to do that, and what made you start writing?
I knew that I wanted to be able to write things that people were actually going to read rather than just me in my bedroom. But because, you know, as a 16 or 17-year-old, you're not ever going to be published by anyone because you haven't got any proven credentials. You have to make your own way about it, and that's probably what led to the fanzine starting off in the first place.
I think that's fascinating that you used the words write something that people are actually going to read, because speaking from my own experience, I could not imagine knowing what other people would want to read when I was that age, really, because it was I read what I read and I had no idea what other people would want to. So that started off the fanzine. So to tell me about that, what was the process behind that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things there, Tom, is that it's probably a massive ego trip, really. You know, fanzines are, in a sense, many fanzines are personal zines, perzines, as they call them, and people just talk about their own lives. I wanted to combine a bit of that and a bit of music, and I think at first I was designing it on Microsoft Publisher, and I had the idea of doing a little magazine. I don't think I really understood what a fanzine was, which was something which differentiated itself from the mainstream media and perhaps offered people a viewpoint that they weren't getting elsewhere. I was determined that it was going to be fun, not overtly political, maybe have a bit of politics in there, but I'm no expert, but mainly just around the music and the bands that I liked, with a lot of daftness thrown in. We had a lot to do with bands, and cake were probably the key themes, I'd say, in the early issues.
Funny how things change.
Or not, as the case may be.
So what's going to be your first choice for today's Desert Isolation Discs, Alex?
First choice is a track that's very close to my heart. It's The Gene Genie by David Bowie. Bowie was a big idol of mine. He didn't influence my style, but he did. His lyrics and the panache that he had was something that I always admired. And, you know, as a teenager, you don't think that anyone else has ever discovered these things. So I remember the first time listening to David Bowie and this tape thinking, God, it blew my mind. And it was my parents' sort of song that they had with each other. And I think Gene Genie is just a fantastically weird song that only David Bowie could have written.
Small Gene Genie snuck off to the city, strung out on lasers and slashed back blazers, and ate all your razors while pulling the waders, talking about Monroe and walking on Snow White. New York's a go-go and everything tastes nice. Poor little greenie. Ooh. Get back on it. Gene Genie lives on his back. The Gene Genie loves chimney stacks. It's outrageous. He screams and he bawls. The Gene Genie, let yourself go.
That was The Gene Genie by David Bowie. Now, Alex, talking about your fanzine a moment ago, you said that it had a lot of daftness going on throughout it, or daftness, as I should say.
Get it right.
Silliness is something that I think is one of your best qualities, and is an interesting one because you can be quite a serious person at the same time. Are you surprised that you haven't grown older and grown more sensible?
No, in fact, I think you know, I've been working for a long time on a fanzine that I don't think it'll ever be published, but its working title is How I Tried and Failed to Become an Adult. And I think there's so much that, you know, you try and do, and you've got to see the funny side of things. And also, I think that, you know, I always like to be in a room and think, you know, I could make every one of these people laugh if I wanted to. Because, you know, people remember that. And there is definitely an element of the class clown about it. You know, I was the class clown. I jumped out of windows. I wrote silly things on the board. You know, I drove teachers up the wall. But at the same time, it's a fantastic buzz that you get from making people laugh. And what I enjoy doing most is taking a serious situation and adding a little bit of silliness into it. I remember once... at school, there was a quite vicious lad. His name was Jeremy, although his slightly posh name was undermined by the fact that he was quite a thuggish lad. Anyway, there was an internal window which he decided one day to headbutt, completely smashed it apart. Everyone in the class was shocked. I remember the teacher just looking down at the table, you know, was really upset. And I just decided to bust out the local... glass repair company's jingle, which was "Coal Sill Windows are the best, double two, double one, double five," and everyone in the room laughed. And yeah, I really was a class clown, but I loved it.
Which is interesting, I think, because you're also quite a deep person, and you read quite serious and quite emotional literature, and have an interest in a lot besides comedy. And I think that is definitely a huge strength that you have those two sides of your character. Mm. But very, very interesting that they've kind of blossomed together as opposed to one taking over the other.
Yeah, I think you don't want to take yourself too seriously. And I think you can keep the serious stuff to yourself. And, you know, I'm a bit of a worrier, but I think it's better that way than you necessarily need to burden other people. I think otherwise you become a sort of you can become a drag on people, and I think it's better to think about things carefully and seriously if you need to, but to be lively and enjoyable company is more important to me.
Right, well, let's see which side of that Alex is going to present us with now. What's going to be your second choice that you would take with you on your desert to your desert isolation area?
Well, since you touch on that side, then I've got to pick a silly tune. I absolutely love this. Basically, I can't imagine being away from British comedy if I'm taken to this desert island. So this is actually a Victoria Wood song, and it's called The Ballad of Barry and Frieda. It's about an elderly couple and Frieda's desire to have sex with Barry, and Barry not being so up for it. And what I love about it is I could analyse every line for hours in why it makes me laugh, but really it's just got the essence of that classic British humour, being beaten on the bottom with a woman's weekly and all these different things. And Victoria Wood is just a genius. I can't believe she recalls so many lines in such a short amount of time, so it's a fantastic song.
Frieda and Barry sat one night. The sky was clear, the stars were bright. The wind was soft, the moon was up. Frieda drained her cocoa cup. She licked her lips, she felt sublime. She switched off Gardner's Question Time. Barry cringed in fear and dread as Frieda grabbed his tie and said, "Let's do it, let's do it, do it while the mood is right. I'm feeling appealing, I've really got an appetite. I'm on fire with desire, I can handle half the tenors in a male voice choir. Let's do it tonight." But he said, "I can't do it, I can't do it, I don't believe in too much sex. This fashion for passion turns us into nervous wrecks. No derision, my decision, I'd rather watch the spinners on the television. Can't do it, I can't do it tonight."
What a fantastic choice there from Alex Lawson. That was Victoria Wood from 1988. We've touched on your silliness. Now, another thing that really, really strikes me is your romanticism. I remember you telling me that you were off filming around Sheffield to make a video of all of the places that your girlfriend at the time loved. And I'd never heard anything so romantic. can you tell us a little bit about perhaps some of the most romantic things that you've done?
Well, I think the first thing to say is, God, what a pretentious person I sound. I think, you know, it's natural to get caught up in these things. But I think the problem I have is that I think about the idea and don't think about whether the person would like it or whether I even necessarily think the things about the person that I'm saying. I think it is a lot of the time, you know. I suppose when you say, you know, some of the things I've done, one of the things that would stick out is something from my girlfriend who I'm going out with now and going to marry next year. Was before we were together, when I was trying to woo her, I actually set up what I suppose you would call a treasure hunt up at Islington, Upper Street, Islington High Street in London, and dashed down to Islington in the afternoon, set up these various things like tying little messages to trees and pedestrian crossings and slipping cards under plates that we were going to be sitting in this various restaurant. And of course she was freaked out. I don't know why I thought she'd be anything else. So yeah, the lesson is make sure that they actually want it first. But that was different because it was genuine emotion. I think other things I've rushed into and written books for people and perhaps, you know, sent messages that actually realistically maybe I didn't feel. But I love the idea of being a romantic. But now I definitely am with Anna, you know, it's more genuine now.
Oh. And what's going to be your third choice for us?
A third choice today is a strong contrast to that, but it's Atmosphere, the woman with the tattooed hands. It's a hip-hop track that I discovered about 10 years ago. I always loved the juxtaposition of hip-hop and piano. I think actually it works together, you know, it might not seem like a natural fit, but Slug, who's the front man, if you will, of Atmosphere, carries this one off perfectly. And it's about a woman who likes to pleasure herself with her own tattoos. It's a crazy idea for a song, but it works perfectly.
On the top sides of both of her hands. She was 43 years old, and as far as I know, had never yet been with a man. It's not that she wasn't attractive,
she was beautiful,
but it was the way that she interacted. She was aggressively passive, to the point where she would have intimidated any myth that ever tried to catch it. On the right hand, she had a tattoo of a nude girl. She claimed it is what God resembled. But on the left, she had a mirrored image of the same female, and this one, she explained, looked like the devil. I remember once watching her touch her own breasts, how the tattoo smiled as they stared down her stomach, as if anticipating when they'd be allowed to caress the sweet flower that they both seemed to hunger.
Sweet flower.
Now, maybe I was high, but it felt so right. Heaven and hell both take to this woman's womb. It didn't make sense how she could commence touching herself with me wide awake in the same room. But if I've learned anything in my years, I've learned I no longer believe in surprise. But what happened next damn near stole my tears. The tattoos came alive right in front of my eyes.
So that was Atmosphere with the woman with the tattooed hands. Interesting to hear that you chose a song which you were interested in the imagery and metaphor and in essentially the writing that was behind the lyrics in that track, showing that you've always got that part of your brain switched on. And it was a great track. So you used to and still do write quite a bit about music, and now you write about football and business news as well. Where do you see your writing going and why?
Well, I suppose the things driving that is putting food on the table for me in the business news. You know, it's you know, a very straightforward job, and you know, I get to interview some interesting people in the business world. The move towards football was quite a purposeful one. I felt like with music, I was no longer perhaps, you know, I never considered myself an authority, but I thought that I was up to speed with the music that I was writing about when I started off with the fanzine. But, you know, as is natural with a lot of people, life gets in the way. And I think if you can't tell people what's going to be, you know, what they're going to be listening to in 6 months' time, then you can't expect them to really value your opinion as a fanzine writer or a blogger. Football, I think, is a bit different. It's a long-term passion of mine. I'm a long-suffering Sheffield Wednesday fan. I've always got my eye in. And to analyse where a team's going or what's happening in a particular match perhaps doesn't take the context or the ability to be as on the ball, excuse the pun, as it does to stay ahead in music journalism.
Do you think that there's a similar amount of analysis in football?
I think it's less less faddy. Like there is a term in football now. There's kind of hipsters teams, and there's certain teams, particularly in German football, it's quite cool to like. And there's definitely a bit of that, but it's nothing like the posturing that you have in music where, you know, you have to think very carefully about whether you want to align yourself to this band or that DJ, because otherwise you might end up looking, you know, uncool yourself. But in terms of actually analysing it, I think football's such a pure sport with very simple aims that... you know, when you break it down, it still doesn't crumble into too many pieces.
Okay, and what's your next choice for us?
The next tune I've got today is something that has been on my list because, you know, you have these lists in your head for a long time. This is Bob Dylan's Desolation Row. It's an 11-minute track, and when I first heard it, I thought, my goodness, there is so much in that tune. And, you know, we all know what a great lyricist Bob Dylan is. And, you know, we all know that he's able to put things together in a clever manner. But I thought this was such a sprawling and fantastic piece. There's so many stories within a story that I can imagine just sitting there in the desert trying to analyse every line and think about what he meant when he's talking about, you know, Betty Davis style and that kind of thing. And, yeah, can't wait to listen to this 4,000 times back to back.
They're selling postcards of the hanging. They're painting the passports brown. The beauty parlor is filled with sailors. The circus is in town. Here comes the blind commissioner. They've got him in a trance. One hand tied to the tightrope walker, the other is in his pants. And the riot squad, they're restless, they need somewhere to go. As Lady and I look out tonight from Desolation Row.
So that was Bob Dylan with Desolation Row. Now, Alex, just to wrap up the questions about journalism and your writing here, in a sense, you seem to me like you've always been pursuing a career in journalism. Is that the case, or have you ever harboured any other ambitions?
I think, you know, you've got to realise what you're average at and go for the best thing, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, or in this case, just Jack. So, yeah, no, I enjoy journalism. I like the thrill of a chase of a news story, and you know, obviously, I've thought a lot of times. You know, it's not the easiest career to pursue, and I'm a long way off achieving what I, you know, would ultimately like to do to be comfortable and enjoy what I do. But when I think about doing anything else, I would miss the kind of slickness that you get in, for example, picking up a news lead and finding out whether it's actually true and then printing it and then talking about that particular story and analysing it. Or, for example, you know, being face to face with someone and interviewing us as we are now, you know, you are given such a privileged access sometimes. And it's so interesting to see what agendas people have. It's great to gossip about the people that you interview. And it is a really interesting world. There's a lot of pitfalls that come with it. But I think when I think about what else I could do, the only desires I've ever had is to be a football manager. Even when I was a teenager, I thought, yeah, I'd quite like to be a football manager. It's slightly sad that even at that age, I sort of knew that I wasn't actually good enough to be a player and would have to be the bloke in the sheepskin coat at the sidelines, you know. But that's what I was thinking.
I'd love to see you in a sheepskin coat.
I think I could pull it off. I need a cigar as well to really offset it nicely.
Yeah, I'll get you one for Christmas. So you say you're a long way off your ambitions.
Mm.
What are they then? What would be the dream?
I don't know. I think for journalism, just to be writing about things that constantly interest me, their music or football or some kind of reporting from abroad, or to perhaps pursue any of the industries that I'm interested in a little bit more. Either I've done a lot of writing about like development in football and how football can be used to develop people's lives and for better, and quite interested in that area. I think that, you know, people get stick and because and the inflated wages that people see that professional footballers have give the game a bad name. Quite interested in pursuing that, or perhaps working out a way to get paid to listen to lots of good music as well would also be it still remains an ambition.
Sounding so noble there for a minute.
Great. Not for long.
So what's going to be your next track for us?
The next track I've got is Claire and the Reasons' Pluto. This is a song I absolutely love. I went to see Claire and the Reasons live with Anna, one of the first gigs we ever went to together. It means a lot to me, and also it's such a fantastic idea for a song. It's basically a letter to Pluto after it was declassified as a planet, saying basically chin up, it's okay, we still love you. And I just thought, what a clever idea. And there's so many times in life you see ideas that you think, God, I wish I'd done that, but in this time you just have to hold your hands up and go, that's fantastic.
So that was Claire and the Reasons' Letter to Pluto, a lovely track, and I think the orchestral backing does justice to such a lovely non-planet. Alex, I've always found it interesting that your mum is a designer who's turned your family house into a show home. It's appeared in magazines and the like, but for years you appear to have taken pretty much no interest in your appearance. Was that a reaction to the way that your mum is?
I think the first thing to say is my mum is definitely a big influence on me, and her passion for everything that she does, be it positive or negative, is exactly what I would do in most situations. So we're quite reflective of each other, unlike my brother, sister and my dad, who are, you know, quite similar in demeanour. In that sense, definitely, everyone is aware of their image, but I think, you know, I definitely felt like, you know what, this is me, deal with it. Probably had at university had some sense that, oh well, I wasn't single, so I didn't need to try as hard, which probably put the death knell on what happened there. But I would say that it is less important to me than other things. I think, you know, as long as you're respectable, and it's taken me about 5 or 6 years now to be able to dress for business meetings, then it's okay. I would never say I was stylish or particularly aspire to be so, but I always like to feel like I'm comfortable, and I like to feel that other people in the room are comfortable. And so, you know, if they want to wear platform heels to go out for breakfast, and I want to wear a baggy stripy top, then so be it. In terms of what my mum has done, I think that she's worked really hard to, you know, create a very unique style, sort of using various kind of vintage materials to create something that people are interested in. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for that. And I don't think I could do that. So it's lucky I'm the daggy one in the corner.
You focused on clothes there, but I think that you've got a keen interest in art. And are there aspects of your life where you do sort of feel like you are more interested in having stylistic control?
Just writing, I think. Yeah, I think that I've got very definite writing style. I like to inject humour. I like to have long sentences, then short. And, you know, I often like to think, you know, if I'm writing, then it would, you know, perhaps be at my best a good Sex Pistols punk song, and at my worst some kind of terrible tie-dye hippie sprawling mess, and usually I hit somewhere in between. So I think in the writing style.
What's going to be your next track for us?
So the next track is one that's very, very dear to my heart. This is Buck 65's Wicked and Weird. A rapper from Canada who I first discovered through a friend's tape about 10 years ago. I absolutely love him. He's a complete genius. I've never, you know, I interviewed him upstairs at the Rescue Rooms in Nottingham, and I've never felt that someone has talked so much sense whilst also, you know, having so much panache in the way that they, you know, talk about music and life. And this song is absolutely fantastic. It's got a brilliant squelchy beat. It's about basically a guy living on the road out of a car, and I know every single word, and me and my friend Daniel rapped it all the way to Latitude, which was as sad as it actually sounds.
The yellow dog, I-95's got a smile on his face and big shiny eyes. Up at a decent hour, never ate yet. Got a little Johnny Cash in the old tape deck. Nothing in the trunk but some baseball gloves. Pair of jumper cables and a set of golf clubs. Blanket on the back seat, we're in rough shape. Sunroof held on with a bit of duct tape. Looking for a gas station, better make a list. Fill her up with regular, I need to take a piss. Sexy girl, air freshener, stacks in a pinwheel. Top up the fluids, clean the bugs off the windshield. Not a care in the world, not a how and a why. No destination, not a cloud in the sky. Back on the road, not a moment too soon. Dish ran away with some other spoon. Wicked and weird, I'm a road hog with an old dog singing soul songs, trying to hold on. Wicked and weird, I'm a rat fish trying to practice doing backflips on your mattress. Wicked and weird, I'm a road hog with an old dog singing soul songs, trying to hold on. Wicked and weird, I'm a rat fish trying to practice doing backflips on your mattress.
That was Buck 65 with Wicked and Weird. Now, Alex, we're getting close to the end of your Desert Isolation discs now. But we're only just sort of touching on your family life, which I think is one of the most intriguing things about you. I sort of have this idea that it was all a little bit Wes Anderson going on in Nottingham. Can you tell me a little bit about your family and the way that you are with each other?
Yeah, I don't think it was too Wes Anderson. To be honest, you know, things were very normal. You know, my mum worked as a teacher, my dad a bank manager. We used to have fantastic holidays away to Italy, where my mum had such a passion for buying antique chairs. that we basically had to strap them to the roof every time we came back. I think what was funny is that we all have a daft sense of humour. We all love quoting Father Ted at each other and, you know, lots of family in-jokes. And one time I remember we were all some kind of army and I was Sergeant Stocky because one of my mum's friends had called me Stocky, and I think my dad was unfortunately Captain Corpulent, and we now refer to him as King, although not really in any form of deference. But, you know, it's the classic middle class family whip. But, you know, it was great. And, you know, I was very close to my sister, you know, hated my brother as you would do, you know, at that age. We were quite a few years apart, and I'd do anything to wind him up, especially if he was revising for some big exams, you know.
Do you still call each other by nicknames now?
Yeah, very much so. Dad is still King. Mom is Monkey Mom, and that's with an O, even though none of us are very American. My sister is Mog or Scovel, don't ask. And yeah, I can vary in names depending on if someone's trying to be nice to me or not. So,
which yeah. You'll admit for now.
Yeah, I'm definitely admitting some of them. Not broadcastable, that's for sure.
Okay, let's have another track then. What would you like to choose?
I'm going to play Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, Terabina, or Nothing Without You. Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan is a well-known Pakistani Qawwali singer who's sadly died. This is, you know, a really emotional song that, you know, brings about a lot when you listen to it. His music has been used all around the world and in films, but I don't think enough people could ever listen to this song. You know, that if everyone in the world apart from one person hadn't heard it, then that wouldn't be enough, you know. So I hope you like it.
That was Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, a beautiful, beautiful song there, and one that I would love to wake up to soon, I think. Alex, they've all been fantastic selections so far, and before we reach your final track, I'd just like to talk to you a little bit about the events that you've run. I said earlier that I would talk about a craft night that you set up, one with the amazing title Come Get Felt Up. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, Come Get Felt Up was sort of born out of Jumpers for Goalposts, which was the Nottingham night that I'd sort of inherited from my friends Pete and Hannah. And I ran that with Tom Wally, who works on Radio 6 Music and, you know, is a brilliant DJ and a great music lover and a fountain of knowledge. And Tom and I were quite keen to do it again, and Anna and Nathan, friends in London, were very crafty, got far more artistry than I have. So the basic concept of the night was simply just to set people a crafty task, be it build something to go under the sea, or to give to the royal baby on its birth, for example. And inevitably it ended up with people creating penises out of felt for the most part. But then you'd have a fantastic band play and give out prizes. And again, I suppose it links to what we were saying earlier. Just love the feeling that everyone was, you know, enjoying being silly and unashamedly. And we found a great venue in London in the book club in Old Street. And I had a couple of fantastic years of putting on great nights, which loads of fantastic people came to, and mainly learned new things to do with pipe cleaners. Which, again, I won't elaborate on.
Okay, Alex, and what's going to be your final track for Desert Isolation Discs?
So this is one that we always used to play towards the end of the night, usually when we were clearing up after people's rubbish that they've been attempting to build some kind of structure with at Come Get Felt Up. This is Freddie Scott's You Got What I Need. And I think there's no one that you can sing this in the face of and they don't think you're the person that means the most in the world to them. And it's just absolutely fun and fantastic.
What a fantastic track to end on. But if you had to pick just one from your Desert Isolation discs, which track would you choose to take with you to listen to for the whole time you're there?
Well, it's only about 3 minutes, but I think Buck 65's Wicked and Weird. It's got so much in it and so many great memories for me. I couldn't live without that one.
A great choice. And we've already given you The Tiger Who Came for Tea and the complete Red Dwarf box set. You've got a luxury item that you can choose. What would you choose to take with you?
Well, I think I'm going to be a bit pretentious and go for a lovely notebook. And I'm allowed a pen, I would have thought, probably tucked into the side of it, because I have such a terrible memory. And even there, I'm sure I need to-do lists, make sure I don't get killed, get water, laze around listening to Buck 65, that I'll need to write them, and I'm sure I'll have a bit of time to actually, really make a difference by probably writing that terrible short story that no one really wanted to read. So yeah, I'll have a notebook, please.
You can have the notebook and you can have the pen. Alex Lawson, thank you very much for being my guest on Desert Isolation Discs.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.